good number of folks from Lorain Avenue. And we're going to be looking at the subject was, well, it was announced last night. Then comes the end. As Dave pointed out, it's not the end of the gospel meeting. It's a different end we're talking about here. And if you turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 15, we're going to start there in verse 24. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 24. Then cometh the end when he shall have delivered up the kingdom to God, even the Father, when he shall have put down all rule and all authority and power. Then cometh the end. Here you see that the Apostle Paul knew that there was an end coming. And you would find out that other gospel writers either allude to that directly or indirectly, an end coming. And Jesus had quite a bit to say about that as well. Now the point is that there's plenty said in the Bible about the end time. And there are many things we're told that will happen at that time. Some details of events, I guess, are not given. And I'm sure that there's lots of folks that wish that there were more details given. I'll be honest with you. I wish that there were more details about this. You know, I'd like to know from a personal standpoint, a selfish standpoint, if you will. I'd like to know that whenever that time comes, how many of the people that I love, how many of the people that I've known and been associated with, that day will hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant, enter in the joy of the Lord." I'd like to know that. But now, we don't have some kind of an advanced listing or something like that, or, you know, or the guest list, you know, like at some other things. We don't have that. But now, I believe that we're told all we need to know. And we ought to be satisfied with that, even though there are folks that are not satisfied with what we've been told. Enough has been told to give us hope and confidence. And we always ought to remember, now before we go any further, we always ought to remember that the goal is really a simple one. You know, I do funerals and I haven't done a whole lot in the last 2 or 3 years. When I was in Arkansas, I'm telling you, I don't know. I did more down there in 8 years than I did in the first 20 years that I was preaching. And it was just kind of a reflection of the congregation and other things like that. But most every time anymore in sermons, I like to point out that the goal is to be in the faith and full of hope when life is over. That's the goal. It's a simple goal. It may be complicated to get to that point a little bit, but it's a simple goal. And if a person who passes away was in the faith and full of hope, I think that that's comforting to know. And it's something that we ought to be striving for ourselves. And so what we have revealed is enough that comes from faith to give us hope and to give us some confidence. Now, it's unfortunate that many misconceptions and or misunderstandings exist about this event. I do most certainly believe that some study, though, will clear up these matters of misunderstanding or misconception, whatever it might be. And I also think that if there's some study involved, it would do a lot to prevent needless speculation, which, by the way, can be entered into without even realizing that that's what a person is doing. And I think that there's lots of brethren that do that. We'll look at one thing in a little while. But now, if we're willing to admit that there are some things that we do not know, and the reason that we do not is because they have not been revealed. And the language in a few places is so clear. That what is revealed, this is it. And there's some things, no, you're not, you're just, it's not going to happen. And just accepting that. But then again, there's people that just, you know, can't do that. But this topic about the end has generated controversy. But if we allow the Bible to teach us, it'll dispel unnecessary controversy. So we study together. And the idea is studying God's Word to come to a better understanding. Now, at the very beginning, I want to point out three things that are very important and they are indisputable to consider before we continue. So, what are they? Well, number one, now remember these, they're going to come up again. But remember this, number one, God will end it. That's who it is. God will end this. Everything that exists and how everything's going and all the complexity that there is in life ourselves and in the universe and wherever we live, everything. God is going to be the one to end all of this. Now, number two, we don't know when this will be. There's been no information given on that. Someone could ask me after services, well, when's this going to be? And I would tell them, I don't know. And they could just continue to ask me. You know, they could ask me every 30 seconds. I'd probably end up having to tell them, I have no more new information than the last time you asked me. And there hasn't been any new information for, well, let's see, pretty close to 2,000 years. So now, can we accept that? That we don't know when? And then one more thing, and I think this is important, that no sign will be given. Jesus said the only sign there's going to be is the sign of Noah. Whereas Noah was in the belly of the fish for 3 days, so will the Son of Man be in the heart of the earth for 3 days. That's it. Even though there were those that were looking for signs. The Pharisees, they could tell the sign. They could tell the signs of the sky. And no. Sorry. No sign. Now, let me ask you this, and I know the answer, but think about it. Are there people that have problem with one or more of those things right up there? They just simply cannot accept this. They think somehow or another God's not going to be the one to end it. They think that, oh, well, we really can know when. People just haven't tried enough, or they haven't used the right formula, or whatever it is, you know, or they haven't looked through the right, I don't know, shiny rock or something, you know, whatever. And they think, oh, yeah, all kinds of signs. I think that's where a lot of our brethren get in trouble with these signs. But anyway, remember these three things. Now, let's look at what's said about the end. If you're still there in 1 Corinthians 15, that's where we're going to start. And we're going to start towards the end of the chapter. So what is said about the end? Here's one thing. Look at verse 52. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, for the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. What is the time period here on this? It's in the twinkling of an eye. How long is a twinkling of an eye? Well, it's not even a second. No, it would be part of a second. Now, I've got no idea what fraction of a second that will be. But you've seen a twinkling of an eye, haven't you? You've seen something that's said or whatever it is, and there's a reaction to it, and that little twinkle comes over the eye, and it's so brief, you see it, it's there and it's gone. That fast. That's what it's going to be like. But that should be no surprise because, you know, really, when it comes down to time, we're creatures of time. We are bound by time. We're slaves to time. But with God, time is meaningless. It doesn't matter. Can he do? I had someone tell me one time, with all the people who have ever lived on the earth, how's it going to happen that fast? Well, I don't know how, but I know it says that it will, in a twinkling of an eye, will all be changed, is the thing to remember there. And everything is going to be gone. Contrary to some folks who think that the Lord will return and somehow or another, He's going to come down here and remodel the earth, if you will. Like going to an old house or something. You know, and you tear off the old siding and you go inside and you gut out the inside and then you build it all up and it all looks new. And I guess they think maybe something like that. I don't know, really. But in 2 Peter chapter 3, you might hold 1 Corinthians 15 ready. We'll be coming back to that. But 2 Peter chapter 3, starting in verse 10, the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also, and the works that are therein, shall be burned up. What's going to be left? Nothing. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in all holy conversation and godliness? Looking for and hasting unto the coming of the day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless we, according to His promise, look for new heavens and a new earth, wherein dwelleth righteousness. New heaven, new earth. And the word there doesn't mean some remodeled version. No. It's altogether new. That's what the word in the original language means. And while we're thinking about that, we notice back here in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and in verse 52 about how we'll all be changed. You know, it says the same thing in verse 51. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 51. Behold, I show you a mystery. Let me stop right there. Later on, after you get home or whatever there is, look up this word mystery in the New Testament. Now, you'll find that it's in there in several different places. And where you find this word mystery, it means, you know, things that are hidden. The meaning of this is hidden. That's a mystery, isn't it? That's the definition of that word, you know. Did you ever pick up a book that's called a mystery novel? Do they ever say in that mystery novel who did it? Yeah, where? Oh, on the last few pages. You mean they don't do it on the first page? Well, no, because if they did that, you know, you'd pick it up at the bookstore and read the first page and then you'd give the book a toss. Huh. But the mystery is revealed in that novel, isn't it? That's right. You look and look it up now. Find the word mystery in here. And you'll find right there in the context where that word mystery's at. You're going to find that whatever it was, it was a mystery, has been revealed. So what's he saying here? I show you a mystery. Well, what is it? Well, here it is. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. And he goes on in this chapter explaining this business about a change. Things that perhaps some did not know. So like what? Well, look at verse 50. Here's something. Now this I say, brethren, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. Neither doth corruption inherit incorruption. Well, there he's talking about flesh and blood. Now, when this change comes, it's not going to be that somehow or another, you know, the bodies that we have that are flesh and blood are going to become better. Some people have the idea that, well, here I am, you know, and I'm 67 years old, and the Lord's going to return, and when He returns, I'll be changed, and I'll be changed where I'm 30 years old. I wouldn't mind that myself. But I don't think that's what that means. No. It indicates that it, whatever it is, it's not going to be flesh and blood like we have now. Well, what's all that about? Well, look at 53 and 54. That this corruption must put on incorruption and this mortal must put on immortality. Like it or not, and I'm to the place where I don't like this much anymore, but our bodies are made to wear out. That's right. And it might happen at different times. My wife's father lived to be 106 years old. It's a little slower decline than a lot of other people, and that allowed him to live for a longer period of time. Some people, it goes pretty fast. But no matter what it is, we're made to wear out. We're not made to be permanent. And don't we know that to be true? I mean, scriptures tell us this. Experience tells us this. Science tells us this. The medical field. I don't know how many times I've gone to the doctor, look at you, stand there, you know, after you've paid him, I don't know what, you've done all these tests, and then stand there, stroke his chin and say, "Man, you're not getting any younger anymore." You know, well, yeah, I know. That's pretty obvious. And you know, and we're not, that's not wrong. That's the way it's supposed to be. So what's it saying here? This mortal must put on what? Immortality. There's got to be a change. And it can't be flesh and blood, because flesh and blood is not supposed to inherit the kingdom. No. So there's a need for what? A change to take place. And who's going to do that? Well, it's not us, you know. It's not going to be that, well, right before the Lord returns, that we'll go in and we'll go into the wherever you go, men or women, and you know, and get your hair done and all that kind of thing. That's not what it's talking about. No, it's talking about taking that mortal body that's going to go into the grave, corruptible, and go the way of all bodies do. No, it's going to be an immortal body. It's going to be different. Different. What else do we find? Well, verse 54, this corruptible shall put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality. Then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. Now, a lot of times, and this is what happens when you get to this point. Now, here's where this kicks in, where people want to know more. They accept this point of view that we're all going to be changed. I think it goes counter to what a lot of people's hopes are. I think sometimes we think that we're going to go off to heaven and we'll be there, and there'll be a little place over here for our family and you know, the kids and the grandkids. And no, that's not it. But then, what is it going to be? What is it like when this mortal puts on immortality? We can see that's what it is. Give us some details. Don't have any. I always like to go to 1 John chapter 3 and verse 2 on this. This is the best answer I can give. John writes, "Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when He shall appear, we shall be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is." That's telling me that, well, I want to know, and I'll have to wait. And there will come a time when I'll have my answer. Now, I hope that's good enough. It's good enough for me, because I've got nothing else to go on. Oh, I could speculate, and I could imagine, and I've got a real good imagination. But we don't know anything more than what it said right here. But again, that ought to be enough. It comes from faith to give us hope and confidence. Of course it can. We also find, and I think sometimes this goes counter to some ideas, in John chapter 5, verse 28 and 29. Now, this is something for all. And what do you find in John chapter 5, verses 28 and 29? Find this. My pages are sticking together again. 28 and 29. Marvel not at this, for the hour is coming, in the which all that are in the grave shall hear his voice, and shall come forth. They that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of damnation. A lot of times this is called the general resurrection, meaning everybody will be raised. Not just the good folks, but everybody. The ones that have done evil, they're going to be raised. They're going to go for a resurrection of damnation. They'll be changed too, because their bodies are no different than anybody else's. They're supposed to put on a body that will be ready for immortality. Now, it might wind up in the wrong place, but we would understand that, this is something that happens. And again, we need to accept the fact that it's something that's available and it's going to happen to all. And all ought to be ready for that. But now the sad part of it is that there are those that you read right here that have done evil. They're not ready. They've lived a life where whatever reason there might be, well, it wouldn't be reason being excuse, they've not prepared themselves for the time in which the Lord will return. It's a sad thing to think about. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 16 and 17, the Lord Himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. Watch now. And so shall we ever be with the Lord. Well, because we've been prepared, not flesh and blood, but with a body for immortality. And we will always be with the Lord. If you think about that, and we think about, well, that's a good message in it. Sure it is. But then there's the other side of the coin. We wonder, what happens to those folks that aren't ready? What happened to those folks who don't go up there and meet the Lord and ever be with Him? What happens to them? Well, they go to a place, a different place, that's described in the Scriptures in different ways. It might be called the place of darkness, or a place of weeping and gnashing of teeth, or a place where it says that the worm never dies and the fire never goes out. Or in another place where it says that the smoke of their torment goes up forever. What does that do for those folks who think that, oh, when death comes for the evil and the wicked, that's just the end of them? How does the smoke of their torment go up forever? They're going to go and end up in a place that's called the lake of fire and brimstone. And it said, that's prepared for the devil and his angels. Now that's what happens. And I'm not trying to scare anyone. But I do think that any kind of thought on this and any kind of a realization of it should certainly be a motivating factor. What about this business of date setting? Well, the easiest answer to that, and it's a simple answer, and it's a good one, and it's fine, and it ought to satisfy everyone, is something that the Lord said. Now, we're going to look at the one, you can find it in Mark's account, but we're going to look at the one in Matthew chapter 24 and verse 36. Now, this is Jesus that says this. He says, of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. That little word at the end of that, my Father only, means that Jesus is saying here, I don't know my Father only. Even though I listened to a preacher one time say, oh, well, Jesus really knew. Now, if he knew, he's really doing a good job pretending about it, that he didn't know. And he said that he didn't know. But despite what this says, there have been people for almost 2,000 years who have decided that they can find out when this is. And they'll come along and they'll just be so sure about this. They'll be so sure about this to the point where they're just, well, they're just full of themselves. And you know, most recently we had this man who came up with this, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. And you saw it on, he's since passed away. He's 90-some years old. And somebody said, well, he would really know because he's 90-some years old. What's that got to do with it? You think a man that's 90 years old can't be foolish? Really? Or a man that's 90 years old somehow or another might lack some wisdom or understanding of things? Oh. But this fellow, they said, oh, look at his education. I don't know, he had a degree in this or that or the other. And he was some brilliant mathematician. And he had taken mathematics and gone through the Bible. And he'd come up with all of these facts and figures and numbers. And then he crunched all the numbers and he said, here's where it's going to happen. And everybody got all excited about this that believed him. And they went out, what'd they do? Interestingly, they liquidated everything that they had. And I'm thinking, why in the world would you do that? What are you going to do with it? And what would anybody else do with it? But anyway, all this. And then what happened? You know what happened. The day came and he goes back and then comes out later, 2 or 3 days after all this, after the failure, and says, I've crunched the numbers again and it's going to be 2 weeks from now. It didn't happen. And everybody was just crestfallen. They thought, oh, this is it. After all, he's almost 100 years old, blah, 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 and he's got these degrees and one thing and another and everything. And he's just wrong. Just wrong. Now, some of the more familiar ones over the years have been William Miller. He's not really well known, but the group that came out of William Miller's prognostications eventually became the Seventh-day Adventists. And then there's another one. Do you know Charles Taze Russell? Well, he had a group that they called themselves Bible students, I think. And they eventually became the Jehovah's Witnesses. Boy, now they have been date setters like you could not believe. He set all kinds of dates, none of which ever came to pass. And I think there was one of them, I don't remember if it was him or his successor, Judge Rutherford, that said the Lord was going to return in 1914. Well, 1914 came and went. Someone says, wait, how about that? Did the Lord return? Yes, the Lord returned. Get ready. But He was invisible. How would you know? But see, some of the answers that have been given to cover up something that was just bogus to begin with, I mean, they're just laughable. And they kept making setting dates until the 70s, and then they pretty well slowed down to just about giving it all up today, at least to where it could be known by the public. Hal Lindsey, there's one for you. He is a premillennialist, a severe dispensationalist. He's been wrong. He has predicted the Lord's return so many times, and he's just been wrong so many times. He had a prediction one time in advance. He said, now if the leader of Israel and Egypt ever sit down at the peace table and sign a treaty, 7 years after that, the Lord will return. A few months after this prediction, Anwar Sadat, president of Egypt, and Menachem Begin, the prime minister of Israel, sat down at a peace table with Jimmy Carter. Are you ready? They signed a peace treaty. One of those Israeli-Egyptian peace treaties that while they're signing it, and as soon as the ink's dry, they're over there shooting at each other again. Anyway, Everybody just went crazy and they thought, oh my goodness, Hal Lindsey's got it. People were scared to death. The late, great planet Earth. Still here. 40-some years later. Pat Robertson. A lot of people don't know, but he was a date setter as well. On that show on television, a TV channel and other things. And interestingly, sometimes brethren get into this. Now, I've got one fellow that was out in Arkansas, and his name was Clarence Foshee. Clarence had a brother that lived there in Arkansas, but Clarence was just an enigma. Clarence just showed up one time, and he's living in his van. He's older than I am. He's living in his van, and he shows up, and he starts coming to church. He's there all the time. Sounds like he's pretty knowledgeable in Bible class, you know, with questions and answers and things like that and so on. But I have this nagging feeling he's kind of like Melchizedek. You know, he didn't have a beginning or an end, and just, you know, here he is. You know, at the end of his time, one day, he's just gone. Years ago, we used to call somebody like that a drifter. They drift in, they drift out. But anyway, Clarence would see something that was going on. How's this? Like these hurricanes that we've got, you know, that just passed, you know, Harvey and Irma. And Clarence would say, I see something like that and how bad things are out there in the world. And I think the Lord's just about ready to return. I heard that in Bible study and just like to fell out of my pew. And I talked to Clarence later. I said, Clarence, there's no sign given and we don't know when. Oh, yeah, I guess that's right. I thought, well, success. Until about 2 weeks later, guess what? He said the same thing again. His mind wasn't changed. How many people are there like that? Oh, there's bad times. Well, there's bad times. There's always been bad times. There's wars and rumors of wars. There have been wars and rumors of wars forever. You know, those things that Jesus warns about before were things that were going to happen before the destruction of Jerusalem. And I'm convinced that a whole lot of those things, at least the categories that they're in, they didn't cease whenever Jerusalem was destroyed. They've continued down to this very day. There weren't signs of the Lord's return then, and they're not now. But we've got folks that can't get off of that. And I don't know why. I just know that sometimes it is. Now here's the answer. Matthew chapter 24, again, verse 42 this time. Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord doth come. I guess that goes along with what's said verse 36, doesn't it? How about verse 44? Therefore be also ready, for in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man cometh. And then chapter 25 and verse 13, watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour when the Son of Man cometh. I guess we don't know. And that ought to be really good enough. So then what is it that we should believe? Well, we should believe, and I'm not going to go over and read these again, in 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 10 through 13, time will be no more. Heavens and earth are gone. You know, the heavens and the earth decide or determine what time is, right? The sun and the position and the rotation of the earth and, you know, the orbit and all that and time and seasons and everything's all dependent on. But if it all burn up, where'd time go? And God's power is absolutely beyond our understanding. The end and the resurrection is going to be one of the great demonstrations of the power of God. I can think of one that's kind of like this, and that would be the beginning. Like in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 and 2. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. You know what? In the end, God is going to destroy the heavens and the earth. They're kind of similar, aren't they? And aren't they demonstrations of the power of God being able to do this and then do that? And doesn't it say that He's the one calling the shots? He's the one that began it. He's the one that's going to end it. What's going to happen? Now, one of the things that's going to happen, and again, now we're not told how all this takes place, but I find this interesting. How about Revelation chapter 20? Revelation chapter 20 and verse 13. It says here that the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them, and they were judged every man according to their works. I think about the sea give up the dead. How many people have died in the sea from the beginning? How many? Thousands of them, right? Some were not buried at sea. Some just fell overboard, drowned, sank down to the bottom after a little while. And then what happened to those bodies? Well, they could have been eaten by some kind of a scavenger or some kind that's out there in the marine world. Or eventually just dissolved away into trace elements. You remember whenever the bombs were dropped in Japan and people were just vaporized. I mean, they were just there walking along and then they're gone. Not a trace. And even whenever the towers went down on 9/11, there were a lot of people that essentially just, their bodies were just, they're just gone. God's got the power to get all these people in all those kinds of situations and raise them up. What compares to that? What in science compares to that? That kind of power. And it's going to do it in a twinkling of an eye. I don't know of any. I think I would bow in submission to that kind of power. But until then, we're told that, things are going to kind of go on like they've always gone on. Back to Matthew chapter 24 again. And the end of the chapter there. In Matthew chapter 24, we'll start with verse 37. As in the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. You can see what he's comparing this to. As in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark. And knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. There are two in the field, one will be taken, the other left. Two women grinding at the mill, one taken, one left. Life's going to go on kind of normal. That's what it's saying there. Chapter 25. You compare that. Compare that, what it says there, life's going to go on normally. I'm sorry. Life's going to go on normally. And compare that to what you see over here in Matthew chapter 24, verses 4 through 7. Take heed that no man deceive you. Many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. Now, what's he saying here? Don't believe this. You will hear wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled. All these things must come to pass, but the end. Do you see this? The end is not yet. And yet I've got lots of brethren think, oh, well, that's a sign of the end. No, it's not yet. Nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in divers places. Kingdoms will rise and kingdoms will disappear. When's the last time you heard about the Prussians? A major power for centuries in Europe. Where are they at now? Oh, they're all gone. What happened to those Edomites? Where'd they go? Now nations come, nations go. That's just part of it. Now back again to where we started. Do we truly believe that God will end it? Do we truly believe that? And really, do we truly believe that we don't know when? And do we truly believe that no sign will be given? I hope so. Do you remember back in what was called the Cold War, if you're old enough, in the most tense part of this, people believed that there was a bomb powerful enough to destroy the world. I suppose some still think that that's the case. Well, then, if that was the how the end's going to come, who's going to be ending it? Is that God or man? So we live in times when morality seems to be at an all-time low. Seems like it. I doubt it, but it seems like it. I don't have the numbers for the 5th century, you know, where you can compare some anyway. I've heard brethren imply that's a sure sign that the Lord is ready to return. And what about economic instability? Wonder whenever the stock market crashed in 1929, how many people thought, well, the Lord's going to return in about a week. Wonder how many there were. I'm just, you know, saying. What if all foreign interests and investors called it all in, all of our loans, and the U.S. economy collapses? If economic collapse, is that the end of the world? Some people would think it is. Well, if so, who brought it about? God or man? And then we got this stuff, global warming. Anyway, now it's a fact that the average temperature has increased in the last century all of 0.7 degrees centigrade. Hand me the sunblock. The cause of this is debatable. Let's just say that the number's right. What's done it? Nobody's got any idea. Nevertheless, we are fairly overwhelmed with folks telling us that man is causing it, and man is thus destroying the planet. So grant that for the sake of argument for just a moment. Is it God or global warming and man that's going to end it? Which is it going to be? So one more time. God will end it. We don't know when. No sign will be given. And then one more point, and the lesson is yours. Are you ready? Are you ready for that time to come? See, you get ready now for that day. If you were making a trip, you know, going out of town or something, you'd probably start getting ready in advance, wouldn't you? I know at our house, Martha starts about a week early. I start about 4 or 5 hours before we leave, you know. It doesn't matter. You get ready ahead of time because you're going to be taking a trip. All right. Same idea over here. I'm going to be taking a trip. Something that's coming. The trip is, well, you meet the Lord in the air. That's the promise if you're faithful. Are you ready for that? Are you faithful? See, you become faithful. You're preparing for that trip to come. Have you done that? Do you believe in Jesus Christ, the Son of God? Have you repented of your sins? Have you confessed Him before men? Have you been baptized? That's what you need to do to prepare to go. And some people, though, they might have been prepared at one time, you know, but they've kind of let that slide. Well, get back on the right track. Prepare yourself again. And we'd be happy to help you to do that. We pray with you and for you. Whatever the case is, the lesson is yours. Now's the right time, and this is the right place to obey the gospel. Why don't you come all together? We stand and sing.